Hi there, it's Matt here, and welcome back to the podcast, and welcome to an episode, or in fact, series of episodes that I know so many of you have been asking for. The episodes on sleep, cannabis, THC, and CBD. Let's get started. If you admit to being a sleep scientist, which on transatlantic flights, I try not to do, because you are then stuck answering questions from rows 22 on back and from rows 21 through 8 up to the front of that fancy curtain for the next 10 hours. But anyway, if you do admit to that, I get asked no shortage of wonderfully interesting questions. And I love to talk about sleep. I absolutely adore, perhaps just not for 10 hours straight when I'm trying to get some sleep. But one of the most frequent questions I get asked is this: does cannabis, quote unquote, help my sleep? And it does seem to do that for me, but I saw on social media that this may not be a good thing. What do you think? My reply is usually desperately annoying to them. It's complicated. Let's explain why it's complicated. And let me start with maybe your connection to cannabis. You may not partake in cannabis or its principal derivatives, by the way, the first of which is tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC for short, and cannabidiol, which is CBD for short. Yet it's likely that if you don't, you are still nevertheless acquainted with someone who very much does. I always get that question. I'm asking for a friend. And before I go any further, I really want to be genuine here. Please understand, this episode or this series of episodes, and myself included, no stage for casting any judgment on the use of recreational substances. My pejorative here in terms of some of the descriptions regarding the use of cannabis and THC when it comes to sleep are simply referring to the science of sleep that is interwoven with these chemical narratives in terms of what they do to your sleep and the consequences. And it probably wouldn't be responsible of me not to remind folks that cannabis and its kin lack at least the regulatory oversight that you may expect. So, for example, here in the United States, for instance, the FDA does keep a watchful eye over pharmaceuticals that your doctor would prescribe, but cannabis slips through the cracks, and it will leave some medical and scientific folks with some very reasonable doubts about the consistency and the safety of these purchases. Cannabis stands as the most widely produced and trafficked illicit drug globally. If you want to read a book that will astonish you about this fact, read a book called Mr. Nice. It's a biography, in fact, it's an autobiography by Howard Marks, written by Howard Marks. Absolutely brilliant book. Anyway, if you look at the World Health Organization, the WHO data, cannabis consumption is on the rise overall, but interestingly, some places less so. And a prime example, recent years have actually seen a decline in cannabis use in England and Wales. And that is in stark contrast, for example, to Italy's significant uptick in the use of cannabis. And it's still a little bit unclear as to why. And while there are numerous benefits that have been attributed to cannabis, there are cautions to bear in mind. Again, folks, I have no horse in this race. I personally, if you'd like to know, and I'm happy to be transparent, I don't partake in cannabis. And that's just me. I am not suggesting that anyone needs to follow that practice of mine or do anything other than that which they wish, as long as they're happy, not hurting themselves or hurting other people. In terms of hurting yourself, though, concerns that you perhaps should keep in mind from the medical and scientific literature, there is evidence of long-lasting impairments in cognitive brain function with the use of cannabis. There is evidence demonstrating the exacerbation of psychiatric conditions, particularly if you look at the data, schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. There are physical risks from smoking, including respiratory damage and heightened infection risk, and obviously the hazard of smoking itself. There have also been links to impaired fetal development and increased cancer risks when used during pregnancy. Just keep those things in mind. I am just simply imbuing you with the information and the facts, and you can decide with that empowerment what you wish to do with your life. Without further ado and a further disclaimer, let's now get into sleep. Today, I'm going to focus a little bit on cannabis in general, which will contain both THC and CBD. And then for the next couple of episodes, I'm going to focus exclusively on THC. I will get to CBD, and it deserves an episode in its own right. If you look at the data, in modern society, faced with all of the challenges that people are suffering from in terms of sleep and getting enough sleep, many people are very understandably turning to cannabis or its individual components of THC and CBD. For example, there was a recent study, it was a great study in over, I think it was over 1,500 medical marijuana dispensary visitors throughout the United States. And what they found was that nearly two-thirds of the individuals who were taking or using cannabis described that they had reduced their own use of prescription sleep medications, the classical sleep medications, things like Ambien, after starting to use cannabis, almost as though the cannabis had acted as a substitution element such that they were no longer needing or requiring their prescription medication. Now, again, I am not suggesting that either one of those two is necessarily better than the other. It's just a descriptive study. This episode is brought to you by another podcast series, the Tim Ferriss Show podcast. Tim's podcast has crossed 1 billion downloads in 2023. That is unbelievable. Tim, and the show specifically, is celebrating its 10-year anniversary this month. I have a little insight from Tim as to what is upcoming in 2024. It's going to be an incredible year. If I were to add up which podcast I have listened to more episodes of in the past 8 years, it's not even close. It's Tim's podcast, hands down by a country mile. I honestly don't know any better podcast interviewer than Tim Ferriss. The questions that he asks are so insightful. His ability to ask those questions and then remain present with his guests is just world class. The second of the many reasons that I will give you is the quality of the guests. From people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jamie Foxx, to Rick Rubin, and in fact to one of my favorite interviews with the reclusive prodigy Josh Waitzkin, to the brilliant Naval Ravikant, the emotional depths of Elizabeth Gilbert. Those are just some of the big names that Tim has interviewed. But in truth, what I like more than the famous guests are the people I've never heard of. Those are the hidden gems. Those gems, because of Tim's questions, end up completely reorganizing the mental furniture of my emotional and intellectual landscape deck. All of which is to say, Tim, congratulations on 10 years and over 1 billion downloads. You are a treasure and you are one of the most brilliant human beings I have had the good fortune to connect with and get to know. For everyone listening, please, please subscribe to his show. Share it with your friends and your family. You can find The Tim Ferriss Show wherever you get podcasts. And you can learn more about the podcast, as well as 5-Bullet Friday, which is Tim's newsletter, with nearly 2 million weekly subscribers over at tim.blog. That is tim.blog. But I've jumped the gun here. Where did this cannabis and sleep story start to begin with? What is the historical narrative of cannabis and sleep? I find medical history absolutely beguiling. It's so intriguing. If you read all of the scientific literature that's available, at least on record, the medical journey, now that's not to say the origin story of sleep and cannabis, which started hundreds of years before that, but if you look at the medical journey of the story of sleep and cannabis, it seems to begin in the 1800s. And in fact, in 1849, there were two seminal reports that unveiled the sleep-inducing properties of something called cannabis sativa. And it was the British physician, Dr. W.B. O'Shaughnessy, who, in fact, at the time, was working in Calcutta's medical college in India. And he was a pioneer in this space. To start with, he didn't begin experimenting on humans. He began by giving a cannabis hemp resin to dogs. And what he found was that for those dogs, here I think the doses appeared to be a little bit too high, Dr. O'Shaughnessy, no pun intended. But the effects of his cannabis hemp resin on those dogs ranged from immobility to stupor to a description of almost drunkenness to a full loss of wakefulness, which was presumed to be this thing called sleep. O'Shaughnessy's human patients then fared a little bit better. I think he got the dosing right. And many of those patient case studies describe a quite significant benefit of cannabis hemp resin that he was using. There was, if you read the reports, however, one patient who showed no clear effects of hemp administration. And astute as he was, O'Shaughnessy offered the explanation that was when he interviewed the individual, that individual had been a long-time habitual user of cannabis. And I will return to the importance of that point later, since it's going to be immensely relevant for you, the listener, if you are a regular user of cannabis. But of course, O'Shaughnessy was saying perhaps part of the reason that this individual did not respond, unlike the others, was because not only was this an individual who was a habitual user, but they may have developed a tolerance to cannabis, and therefore the benefits of that cannabis on sleep were lost because they built up that tolerance. As I said, I will come back to that point a little bit later. After the work of Dr. W.B. O'Shaughnessy in the medical record came Dr. John Clendinning. He was working in the United Kingdom at a hospital which is now known as St. Charles's Hospital. It wasn't named that when he was back working there, and it's a hospital I actually know very well. Clendinning was focusing squarely on human patients. He wasn't doing any work in dogs. And before I tell you his results, I absolutely adore the writing of Dr. Clendinning in some of his monographs. It's one of the reasons I spend probably far too much time reading science that has been written several hundred years ago. Back then, they wrote in such an impeccably beautiful way that sometimes I can't even extract the facts of what they're saying because I'm admiring their penmanship and their authoritative brilliance with the way that they string words together. Oh, it's lovely. Anyway, not only were Clendining's reports of cannabis as a medical intervention for poor sleep groundbreaking, but he offered these just achingly beautiful declaration of sleep's virtues. If you don't mind, I'd like to offer a quote illustrating the writing that I love so much. This is what he said at the beginning of one of his monographs, describing exactly what sleep does to gift us health. And he said the following: looking at disease abstractly, the securing of adequate daily rest in sleep by procuring it artificially, if necessary, provides a suspension of any morbid actions or conditions that mitigate against the refreshing form of repose. And what he was saying there is that by getting sleep, and perhaps even getting it artificially, if necessary, he believed, will help prevent the ill health and the harms and the conditions that we will all fall prey to if we're not getting this thing called a restorative night of sleep. In other words, a refreshing repose, as it were. Ah, I spilled over 330 pages of ink in my first book to basically say as much that he said in a single paragraph. Note to self: must improve authorial skills, writing ability, and elegance of vernacular and descriptive prose, Walker. Get it together, man. Anyway, my deficient writing and language aside, patient after patient for Clendining, and by the way, if you sum up all of his work, there were 18 patients in total, which I know doesn't sound very much, but back in the day, that was a considerable number. And that included one of his nurses, by the way, that he was treating. The modern day, that's a big faux pas, but almost all of them, without doubt, experienced at least some degree of sleep recovery after an acute evening dose of what Clendining called his hemp tincture. A lovely phrase, isn't it? Similar effects were then described just before the turn of the century by Dr. J.B. Bradbury in his Crunane lectures, and those were delivered, you can actually receive copies of them, from the Royal College of Physicians in London. And he was demonstrating that cannabis and some of its derivatives would provide a sleep-enhancing or almost a sleep-optimizing benefit for many of the patients that he was seeing who were struggling to get sleep, either because of the ailments that they were suffering or because of their insomnia. A sponsor of today's show is Inside Tracker, which is a service that comes out to your home and they will analyze your blood and your DNA to know precisely what is going on inside of you. Hence the name, Inside Tracker. They look at your blood, your metabolic signals, your hormonal health metrics, and then they give you a personalized, actionable set of lifestyle changes in response to that readout. And the goal there is to improve your health. I was looking and informed they have some new cardiovascular and new hormonal biomarkers that I'm particularly interested in. One that I'm focused on is something called ApoB, which is an absolutely critical heart health measure. And I get it done now with them somewhere between 4 to 6 times a year. Why? Well, my family, unfortunately, has a strong history of cardiovascular disease, so I am checking that pretty ruthlessly. And by the way, I do buy the product myself out of pocket. I don't want to fall prey to any of those trappings and undue incentives. Although, with full admission, I still use my own discount code that you can use to get some money off. And that code for you is insidetracker.com/Matt Walker. So just go over to insidetracker.com/Matt Walker. And again, if you want to get that discount, it is insidetracker.com/Matt Walker. Thanks very much. So now let's turn a little bit to exactly how cannabis works in the brain, which will then teach us exactly how cannabis could be impacting sleep. Cannabis and its derivatives of THC will target something called the cannabinoid system. That cannabinoid system, no matter whether you use cannabis or not, already exists inside of you. It exists inside of all of us. In fact, you were born with a cannabinoid system. In fact, you also produce your very own naturally occurring cannabinoids. And those cannabinoids that come from inside of you will communicate and speak with this system, this cannabinoid system. Those naturally produced cannabinoids inside of you are what we call endogenous, meaning that they are of you, that they come endogenously, that they are from inside of you. Hence, they are termed endocannabinoids. The main welcome sites for your own naturally occurring endocannabinoids are the cannabinoid type 1 receptors, or the CB1 receptors. Now, there are a number of different CB receptors. We'll speak about the CB1 and the CB2 receptor in this episode. But just keep in mind that the backdrop here, don't worry if you're freaking out by all of the science here, you have a cannabinoid system inside of you, and you release these chemicals, endocannabinoids, and they latch onto these welcome sites of the cannabinoid system called cannabinoid type 1 and cannabinoid type 2 receptors. We're going to focus on the CB1 receptors. Those CB1 receptors are in vast numbers of cells throughout your body, and they also populate, however, many neighborhoods within your brain. In other words, these endocannabinoids and the endocannabinoid system and its receptors are widespread, and they represent a universal operating system inside of us, human beings, and in fact, within many different species. So then, what about THC that you consume through numerous different routes? And that could be smoking, it could be eating it in a brownie, it could be taking it on board as a gummy that you chew. What about THC in terms of how it interacts? Well, THC, just to give it its proper nomenclature here, is coming from outside of the body. You're taking it into your body through these different routes, and therefore we describe it as an exogenous cannabinoid, not an endogenous cannabinoid. It's coming from outside of you rather than produced from within you. Within you, endogenous, outside of you, exogenous. THC is what we call the psychoactive component of cannabis. In other words, it's the part of cannabis that gets you high. And THC activates the CB1 receptors in a similar manner to your endocannabinoids, but it produces really quite different results. And we'll get onto those effects in just a second. But CBD, you may be asking, well, if I've ever taken CBD, I don't get high. And why is that? Well, CBD is one of the non-psychoactive components of cannabis. It does not make you high. Why is that? Well, in part because it does not bind directly to the CB1 receptor, or in fact, the other receptor I mentioned, the CB2 receptor. Instead, CBD actually modulates the activity of your own cannabinoids. It doesn't go after the cannabinoid receptors. It actually just modulates and changes the activity of your very own innate endocannabinoids. And it also impacts other chemical systems in the brain, such as serotonin and the inhibitory brain chemical or inhibitory neurotransmitter that we call GABA. And it may be the impact on the GABA system, the impact of CBD on the GABA system, that results in some of the reductions in anxiety that have been associated with CBD. And in fact, indirectly, because anxiety is reduced by way of CBD, may promote sleep by removing the thing that is blocking it for many people, which is the anxiety. And again, don't worry, there will be an entirely separate episode on CBD and sleep, but let's refocus on THC and sleep. THC has been touted by folks, including many on social media, for its quote-unquote benefits as a sleep aid. If you look at many of the products that you can buy out there in the space, they are touting THC or some combination of THC and CBD as a sleep remedy, phrases of, you know, knockout, and they've got all sorts of very powerful marketing, let's just say. Is that true? No. And yes. Yes, in the short term, in that THC can improve certain sleep metrics. No, in the sense that if you continue to use it, many aspects of sleep get considerably worse. Let me start with the initial short-term better news. If you are not a frequent user and you receive experimentally in a laboratory an acute dose, meaning a single evening dose of THC, we can observe really quite a reliable and robust decrease in what we call sleep onset latency, which is just a very fancy way of saying that when you have a single acute dose of THC in the evening and you're not a regular user, you fall asleep faster. Statistically and reliably, you fall asleep faster. The second effect is that you will spend less time awake during the night than is normal for you, that same individual. And there was a small pilot study that also suggested that the acute single shot of THC in naive users induced a slight numeric increase in deep non-REM sleep, although it was borderline significant if you look at the data. Now, that is the short-term win. That's why I was saying no for the most part, but also, yes, in the short term, you will get, if you are a naive user, some degree of a sleep benefit across that collection of different sleep features. But that short-term win comes with a long-term loss, and you are unfortunately going to be setting yourself up for even more sleep problems than you started with. A supporter of today's podcast is a comprehensive nutritional drink that I'm sure you've heard of, and one that I've genuinely been using for almost, gosh, now 4 years to date, and I continue to use it. That is AG1. AG1, if you don't know, it's a nutritional supplement, and for me, I put it in my shakes that I make, my post-workout shakes, and it contains over 75 different minerals, vitamins, probiotic, prebiotics, you name it, and you consume it every day. By the way, for the record, I do buy my own. I hope that that's a testament, the fact that I'm using it, but also I just don't want to fall into any of the trappings of free product. It's perhaps good to also know that they are registered and approved by the Therapeutic Goods Administration. They also have GMP or Good Manufacturing Practice badges and stamps. They are rigorous. So if you want to reshuffle the things that you're taking, such as multivitamins, etc., you can start by trying AG1. And you can try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of both vitamin D and K2. And for listeners of this podcast, you can also get, in addition to those things, 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription. So go over to drinkag1.com/Matt Walker. That is drinkag1, all one word, drinkag1.com/Matt Walker, and you can check out there. The benefits I described above for a single shot acute dose in a naive user do not persist with continued use and instead often leads to worse sleep outcomes. For example, that study that I described earlier, where I mentioned there was a study of over 1,500 patient visits to these dispensaries, certainly what they demonstrated was that almost 2 out of every 3 individuals said that they had reduced their use of prescription sleep medications after starting medical cannabis. And you would think that that's a good thing. Look at that paper in more detail and other studies in more detail, and you start to think otherwise. Initially, cannabis may help you with your sleep efficiency and your sleep satisfaction. And one study reported that patients who were administered a form of cannabis, a medical grade form called dronabidiol, at a dose of 10 milligrams 4 times a day, in other words, a total daily dose of 40 milligrams, they did show improvements in their sleep efficiency. In other words, they were spending more of their time in bed asleep. And as a consequence, they were reducing the amount of time that they spent awake. However, that was just for the first week. Oh, and by the way, for anyone who's worried about their waistline, in that study, those individuals, once they began that synthetic form of cannabis called dronabinol, they began to suffer from an expanding waistline. Why? Because they started consuming over 300 extra calories each day. I won't speak about the effects of cannabinoids on appetite. Suffice to say, they do increase it. That's the whole I get the munchies when I smoke weed phenomenon. But coming back to that study, the benefits that they got with sleep certainly were present in the first week, but when you started to look past that first week, things changed. By the second week, those sleep benefits had dissipated. And furthermore, although the single dose of cannabis that I described earlier could reduce the number of awakenings totaling across the night, if you split the night hour by hour, you get a very different story with cannabis use. In fact, when you are using cannabis to help with your sleep, quote unquote, help with your sleep, in the second half of the night, things are significantly worse. And in fact, there is a dose response relationship. The more THC that you take before bed, the greater and greater the amount of time that you will spend awake in the second half of the night. Why is that a problem for you? It's a problem for you because it's the second half of the night where it is typically hardest to stay asleep. Why is that? Because the sleep pressure that we've described that builds up across your waking day is so much less by the second half of the night. Because the first half of the night has been removing and clearing away some of that adenosine sleep pressure, and therefore you've got a lot less sleep pressure weighing you down on your shoulders in the second half of the night, and therefore it's always going to be easier to fall back asleep, usually in the first half of the night than the second half of the night. And unfortunately, it's the second half of the night where you're going to be waking up much more frequently after use of cannabis. And I will come back to this in the next episode, but suffice it to say that this is probably one of the reasons why we see a very strong interrelationship between cannabis use and insomnia. If you are someone who is using cannabis, you will typically have a far higher likely probability of also having insomnia. Again, that is not causal data. It is simply associational data. But what I've just described mechanistically provides a reasonable biological basis to explain why that link may be present. And if you look at people who use cannabis, they certainly have considerably high rates of one of those forms of insomnia that we've spoken about before, which is something called sleep maintenance insomnia. So sleep onset insomnia, I struggle to fall asleep. Sleep maintenance insomnia is that I can't stay asleep. If you're smoking cannabis early on in your use, you are probably not going to have a hard time falling asleep because the cannabis will speed the quickness of sleep to you and reduce the time it takes you to fall asleep. However, with that second half of the night awakening issue and the fact that you've got a lot less sleep pressure weighing you down to keep you asleep or put you back to sleep, no wonder that cannabis users therefore will have higher rates of sleep maintenance insomnia. So that is another one of the detriments, that with chronic long-term use, the tables are turned. No longer are you experiencing the benefit of staying asleep for longer and spending less time awake. Those benefits deteriorate, and if anything, they are replaced by significantly worse sleep, particularly in the form of the quality of your sleep in the second half of the night and significantly more awakenings. That is me describing to you so far a little bit about what cannabis is, THC, CBD, the history of it, the acute impact initially in naive users, and then some of the long-term chronic detriments on your sleep and different features of your sleep once you become a long-term chronic user of THC. But there is another detrimental consequence of THC with regards to sleep, and it concerns the individual stages of sleep and the quality of those stages of sleep. There is also a very grave issue about your ability to stop using cannabis and the problems with sleep that you will face when you try to stop using cannabis, and the vicious cycle that you end up failing in your attempt for abstinence from cannabis because your sleep is so much worse because you've developed your sleep dependency on THC to get you asleep, that you end up relapsing because the insomnia and the sleep problems are so bad and you get caught in a vicious cycle. And all of these things warrant a much deeper discussion, which we're going to come on to in another episode, because I'm now looking at the time and realizing, oh my goodness, this whole podcast racket started off with me trying to do these short episodes that would last only about 10 minutes or 12 minutes. I get so excited by sleep and so excitable, but suffice to say that there is not an emerging rosy picture here. And to reassert, I think it's so important, this is me just trying to provide you with the objective empirical scientific data. Please know I don't have any axe to grind. I'm not on either side of the debate here. My goodness, this episode, so much to have told you about and for you to absorb, so much more to tell you about. I've been going on for far, far too long. I will stop there. Don't worry, we will pick back up in the next episode. I'm only ending it because of fear for your own consciousness. I don't want to verbally sedate you with my own prose, having listened to me for so long. Most people can't. They do lapse into a state of unconsciousness. I'm sorry if that has happened to you. Gosh, my British nature is so ingrained. I could write a dissertation on the proper etiquette of apologizing to inanimate objects after bumping into them. I do it all the time. It's terrible. I'll bump into, let's say, the dishwasher door and I'll apologize to it. Anyway, enough. Apologies again. I wish these wonderful people who are listening a very delightful, very restorative night of sleep. And having done that, I will simply say take care and bye for now. Thanks very much indeed.